May it please the court. According to the director, the taxpayers in this case should have paid sales and use tax on goods delivered to line haul towboats in the Mississippi River beginning at least 13 years ago in 2001, which is the beginning of the audit period. This departure from the department's prior policies, as evidenced by their stipulation they made in a 1987 case called Patton Tully Transportation Company, was not made known to Louisiana Dock Company or ACBL until an audit in 2006. And it wasn't made known to Commercial Barge Line Company that the director thought it was liable for sales and use taxes until 2010, although it had received a letter after the audit saying that it was not liable for any sales and use taxes at all. But in the year since 1987, there have been a number of developments that have directly affect these kinds of taxes. First, there was the passage of the federal statute, the Maritime Security Act of 2002, which I'll talk about more in a minute. There was also a decision from the Illinois Court of Appeal involving constitutional issues as affecting sales and use taxes on deliveries to line haul towboats operating in the Mississippi River. And as a result of those decisions and those statutes, sales and use taxes in this case should not be able to be collected by the state of Missouri in these particular circumstances. The Maritime Security Act 2002 was enacted by Congress in response to 9/11, and in addition to a number of other provisions governing the maritime industry, part of it was passed with Section 5B. Section 5B provides that no taxes should be levied upon or collected from any vessel operating on navigable waters of the United States. And of course, the towboats operated by ACBL, the line haul towboats, are operating on the Mississippi River when they were in the state of Missouri, which is one of the major navigable waters of the United States. There have been a couple of cases that have applied Section 5B to invalidate taxes, both from Tennessee, Moscheo, and Polk County, which we've cited and discussed in some detail in our briefs. The Tennessee tax cases invalidated a tax on tickets for admission to use of whitewater rafting. Now, it's been distinguished by the director and was distinguished by the commission as being a privilege tax in Tennessee, not a sales tax. But that is just a name. I mean, if you look at the substance of it, it was a sales tax in substance. This was a tax that was based upon the amount of the ticket. The rate was based upon the sales tax rate in Tennessee. And I might point out that in Missouri, the sales tax and the use tax are for the privilege of selling goods and services. It also uses the word privilege. It's the same as the sales tax. It really is, the substance is the same. And it was held to be invalidated under MARSEC, the Maritime Security Act, because it was a tax on a vessel operating on the navigable waters of the United States. In fact, the primary issue in that case was whether that particular river was navigable at the point at which these rafts were being used. The other case that the director relies upon and that the commission relied upon was a Hawaii case, Real Hooker. That wasn't even a sales or use tax case. That was a gross receipts tax case, which was similar. It was more like an income tax case. And this isn't an income tax case. This is sales and use tax. This is on specific transactions on specific boats operating in the Mississippi River.
Are these expenses incidental or are they substantial?
Pardon me?
How much is involved here?
The total amount that was assessed exclusive of interest and penalties was $78,000. The amount that the commission found was could be approved was only on the southbound deliveries because those are the ones that were made in Missouri. Northbound, the boats are generally east of the boundary between Missouri and Illinois. And on southbound trips, they're generally west of the boundary between Missouri and Illinois. And so she found that those deliveries made west of the river were the ones that could be taxed. And I think that reduced it to somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 or so.
How does Illinois handle it?
Pardon me?
How does the other side of the river handle it? How does Illinois handle it?
Well, interesting situation there. Here, the company pays sales tax on Illinois deliveries from Economy Boat Store based in Illinois because the Economy charges it. And they've been required by the Department of Revenue of Illinois to charge it. But Economy Boat Store is the only vendor on the Illinois side, so the company had to pay it. They had no choice. Now, the Illinois case, the American River Transportation case, ARTCO case, I think would say that there's no, Illinois shouldn't be charging any sales or use tax either on items delivered to line haul boats, because they don't receive any services from the state.
Don't you pay all the taxes on the northbound?
Pardon me?
Don't you pay taxes on the northbound vessels to Illinois?
For Economy, yes. Now, they didn't pay taxes on northbound from deliveries made by Louisiana Dock. So, Economy Boat Store is located in Wood River, which is on the northern side of the St. Louis Harbor. And so when deliveries were being made on the southern side of the harbor, they usually were made by or through Louisiana Dock,
so
even with northbound or southbound.
So the AHC, with that determination or with that fact that on the northbound sales and use tax is paid to Illinois, that then on the southbound it should be paid to Missouri, under what authority did they have to do that?
Well, the AHC said that the sale occurred, found as a fact that the sale occurred when the goods were delivered to the boat, inspected and approved by the boat's crew. Only then was the sale, did the sale occur. Well, if it was on northbound, the sale occurred, didn't occur in Missouri, it occurred in Illinois. It'd be up to Illinois to tax it if they thought it was taxable or not. She didn't make any finding really as to whether they should or shouldn't, just that it was not taxable by Missouri.
Well, but in Missouri, she said because of a lack of evidence, she kind of split the baby, it looked like to me.
Well, she did a rule of thumb. I mean, on the river, where you are when you actually receive the goods would probably depend on where you're at and the particular conditions of the river at the time and so forth. I mean, generally, when you go northbound, you're generally east of the, you're generally in Illinois because the boundary runs down the center of the river. Mm-hmm. And when you go southbound, you're generally in Missouri. Not always true. For example, when boats go northbound through the East Bridge, they come from the Illinois side over to the Missouri side to go through the Western Span, because you can't go in the Eastern Span. The towboats can't.
So the tax is on the goods, not on the boats, right? The tax depends on what goods are delivered to the boats.
Well, I think the tax is on the boats. I mean, the boats pay the taxes. I mean, it's
but it's for the goods, right?
Well, it's measured by
council. Do they pay taxes on the value of the boats?
No,
or on some travel time through Missouri, or on the goods that are delivered to the boats?
They pay taxes. The taxes would be measured by the value of the goods.
Okay.
Could you address the statute of limitations issue before you get too deep into your time?
Sure. The statute of limitations is 3 years. The evidence was clear that Louisiana Dock filed all sales and use tax returns that were required to be filed during the audit period. The evidence was also clear that Louisiana Dock sought and received permission from the Department of Revenue to file those returns on behalf of all of the constellation of companies, including the barge line and the actual single member that owned the single member LLCs. Plus, under the statute, all single member LLCs are all collapsed together into the one company that is the single member. And so when Louisiana Dock filed returns, that was a return. The department had 3 years in which to file them, or in which to assess. Now, the department says they didn't file any returns, but they did file returns. Louisiana Dock filed returns. And as a result of that, all of the assessments, except for those for the year 2006, were barred by the statute of limitations. Some of the assessments go back to 2001. They were barred before there was ever even an audit, which didn't take place until 2006. Some of them, there were waivers that were extended for a year, but after the waiver expired, they didn't do an assessment before the waiver expired. Some of the waivers were invalid because the statute of limitations had already expired. And so what we have left is about, I think it's $1,600 in sales taxes and about $11,000 in use taxes that aren't barred by the statute of limitations.
You said the Louisiana Dock had permission or had approval from the department to file on behalf of all the entities?
Yes, it did.
What was the nature of that approval?
Well, it's some correspondence, it's Exhibit 78, and it was also testimony by Judy Hupp, who was the director of tax at that time, who testified at the hearing that was done. And in any event, under the statute, I mean, if the statute applies and it's valid, then a filing by one company, they're all considered the same company anyway,
well,
whether they've received permission or not.
The statute it seems like Louisiana Dock would be the disregarded entity, and that its,
well,
its parent or member would be the, ordinarily the taxable entity.
Well, if they filed it and they received permission from the Department of Revenue to do it, Louisiana Dock was the one company that had facilities in the physical facilities in the state of Missouri on shore in the city of St. Louis. And so, for as a matter of convenience, rather than filing two or three different sets, they filed on behalf of everybody.
And what kind of returns were those? Were they sales and use, or were they income or other?
Sales and use tax returns. I mean, they did pay taxes. You know, there were sales and use taxes that they paid. These are the ones they didn't pay. And of course, when you make a return, but you don't include everything, why, the statute starts running from the time you made your return. Even if the department comes along later, as they did here, and said, well, you should have paid more than you did. You owed on other transactions. Just briefly turning to the ARTCO case, I see I'm close to out of time. This is a situation, same, just like ARTCO, these were line haul boats that didn't receive any services from the state of Missouri. The commission found, finding of fact number two, did not receive any direct services from the state of Missouri.
Does Missouri maintain the river in any way, the docks or anything like that on the Missouri side?
The river's maintained by the United States government, Corps of Engineers, patrolled by the U.S. Coast Guard. The locks, dams, channels, all of that's maintained. Channels are dredged by the Corps of Engineers. The locks and dams are built and maintained by the Corps of Engineers.
That depends on whether you disregard the nominal difference in entities, doesn't
that's
it?
That's right. The only connection, although in the ARTCO case, they had the same kind of connection. They actually owned the boats that brought the tows in and out, the barges in and out. Here, the boats that brought the barges in and out were owned by Louisiana Dock, which for purposes other than sales and use tax are considered separate legal entities. No further questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, counsel.
May it please the court, Your Honors. The principal issue in this case is whether sales and use tax on goods used on boats, such as food and paper products and other things, which are ordered, delivered, and consumed while the boats are in Missouri on the Mississippi River, are fairly related to the services provided by the state of Missouri. Now, I think a story might best illustrate this situation the best. This is the story. The taxpayers' employees get up from their homes, they go to the dock at St. Louis in Missouri to catch a transport to the line haul towboats, which are operating in Missouri on the Mississippi River by operation of law. Halfway out into the channel is Missouri sovereignty. They then are there, they have breakfast consisting of, say, donuts, for example. Maybe some cereal to balance their diet out a little bit. which they eat in Missouri using plastics, you know, paper products and so forth. At the conclusion of the breakfast, then they realize they're running perilously low on some of these items. They then order from a supply company as well as from another division of the taxpayers that's in Missouri. They order some more supplies from Missouri. Those supplies are then shipped from the supplier or purchased in Missouri, these supplies that are for the taxpayers, American commercial barge lines. They are then shipped through Missouri's roads to the dock in Missouri. And in fact, quite often when they arrive at the dock, the barges are not there. These line haul tow barges are not there. And they have to be stored by another division of the taxpayers in St. Louis. Interestingly, the commission concluded that title passed, in most instances, title passed when they were delivered there in St. Louis. So at that point, they are the property of the taxpayers. Title passed there. In addition to that, they came to rest for purposes of use tax in Missouri. And this division, the last thing I would say is this division, this other division, is in fact treated for purposes of both federal law and Missouri law as the same entity, as a disregarded entity. And so they are, in fact, the law and the petitioners or the taxpayers here would concede that they are a division, or they considered a unincorporated division of the parent. So, are the sales and use tax fairly related to the services that Missouri provides in all of those scenarios? Absolutely they are.
Obviously, opposing counsel says we should not disregard for these purposes. Can you respond to that?
Should not disregard for these purposes?
That we should say there's no services received by the barges going up and down, that they're separate from the dock company.
Yeah, I would disagree with that, certainly. They, in their opening argument, actually said that all are collapsed together. All of these entities are collapsed together. I don't know how you can, in a sense, they want to create a shell game in which an LLC, a wholly owned LLC of the parent corporation, can insulate itself from any sales tax whatsoever by merely operating through another division of the parent corporation. And again, I don't think that is not the only reason why there is a fair relationship, which is not an overly stringent standard. Is there a fair relationship because title passes? And you can't consider, which is what the Illinois court on this issue said, the dissent said, you can't consider these things in isolation. The goods don't just get magically dropped out of the sky onto the boat. They have to get there some way. And but for Missouri services, they would never get there.
The title to some passed at the dock and some passed on the boat, didn't they say?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. How is that distinction made? Do you agree with that distinction?
Yeah, that's hard to say because the title, with respect to those things that were delivered to the Louisiana dock, this sister corporation or this not corporation, this division, the evidence was from the supplier that once they delivered it, risk of loss passed, and it was no longer with them. And Louisiana Dock said, well, it's ours now, but actually the goods were for ACBL, the other division. So the title passed at that point, and it could have only passed really to ACBL because they're the purchasers of it. The fact that Louisiana Dock was holding it for them or storing it for them is merely convenience of, because of these are all collapsed together, they are one, effectively one entity.
So you're saying because of the physical presence of Louisiana Dock in Missouri, that creates liability for the ACBL?
Yeah, that is part of it. That's not the only reason, but that's part of it. Because a division of the taxpayers, and the taxpayers are not just ACBL, this one that operates the line haul towboats, but it's the parent corporation too. They're one of the taxpayers at issue here as well. And it's their divisions that are at issue.
It seems like you want to collapse all of these companies together and treat them all as a single unit for every purpose except statute of limitations, where the returns of one of them don't constitute the returns of all of them. Your way out of that corner.
Oh, that's an easy one out of that
corner.
Okay,
good.
All right. So they are required to file, when I say they, all of those entities are required to file, their parent company is required to file, not the individual LLC. They're disregarded. And so if they are filing that individual LLC, it doesn't count with respect to the parent corporation by operation of federal law. I mean, now they are considered together, but they can't file the tax. They are required by federal law to have the parent corporation file that tax return.
Well, they argue something like estoppel, that because they did and you knew they did, that therefore you can't make that argument.
Right. I think it's very, yes, it's very similar to estoppel. And so we begin with the notion that statute of limitations, of course, is an affirmative defense and must be proven and established by the taxpayers in this instance. Their director of tax, the one that testified, also gave an affidavit. In the case. And in that affidavit said CBL, meaning Commercial Barge Lines, did not file any sales or use tax returns for the applicable periods in which ACBL made purchases. Did not file. So the commission was perfectly within its rights to conclude that, notwithstanding this 1998 letter saying, which there's no evidence that it was necessarily accepted by the Department of Revenue, saying we will construe all Louisiana Dock filings as if it's for the parent. You put the name of Louisiana Dock LLC on there, and the Department of Revenue considered it, the Louisiana dock, not necessarily the parent corporation, which was required to file. Now, this is in direct contrast to their notion that Commercial Barge Lines, one of the taxpayers, was the one filing in pseudonym with the Louisiana dock. This is an interesting complication of a whole bunch of LLCs collaborated together. And even if we accept that all of the filings by the Louisiana Dock LLC were on behalf of the Commercial Barge, which they weren't, and that letter was actually on behalf of another wholly owned entity. In that letter, I don't have it written right here. In that letter, it purported to file on behalf of American Commercial Lines Holdings LLC. Which it doesn't
the
appear
sister sub.
Yeah, which doesn't appear to be the ultimate parent corporation. But even if that's all true, they still owe tax. they would still owe some tax. And my basic point, the point I want to get across here is that one division cannot, by their filing of a tax, cannot bind another division or the parent. Now, if that letter that they wrote in 1998 is construed as in estoppel or evidence that is actually being filed on behalf of the parent, then that's another matter. But none of their tax filings ever disclose any of the transactions involving the other division. So how could it have been a filing on behalf of the parent when it only disclosed the ones that the Louisiana dock was involved in? So that's another complication of that. Again, it's an affirmative defense, and they have to prove it. That in fact it was on behalf of commercial barge lines, and their affidavit from the director of tax says Commercial Barge Lines CBL did not file any sales or use tax returns. Commission took that and agreed. So I haven't heard any argument on the constitutional arguments here. I will say that the constitutional provisions are not about avoidance of tax. Under their theory, they really could avoid tax altogether, right? on anything, as long as they're insulated, in terms of it's delivered on the navigable waters. That's not what it's about. It's about fairness. It's about apportionment. You look at the elements cited in Fall Creek, has a substantial nexus with the state. One, that's not even in dispute. The second one is fairly apportioned. That's also not in dispute, but it's clearly directed at, are we dividing it properly? Not, are they excluded or accepted from tax altogether, which would be the result here. Let me turn now to the Maritime Securities Act of 2002, which is directed at taxes levied upon or collected from vessels or other watercraft. And I actually think that the whitewater rafting cases are very instructive, because the taxes in there, whether they're called privilege taxes or whatever, actually the use of the word privilege suggests is instructive, and that is, it is a tax on the use of the navigable waterways, right? Not upon using something while on the navigable waterways, right? That is an important distinction. Certainly, if we tried to tax somebody who was getting a ride on the Missouri River, for their ride on the Missouri River, that would be prohibited under this act. But the fact that they are purchasing something or using something while on the river is not necessarily prohibited by the Maritime Act. If that were the case, then all of the fuel that's used by these ships would be tax exempt too. Right? It would be the same thing, because it's being used while on the navigable waterways. They're not being taxed for the use of the navigable waterways with that fuel, but they are being taxed on those purchases. They wouldn't even argue that, right? And that's the distinction. It's not about whether or not goods can be subject to tax if they're used on the waterways, but it's federal law saying that if you're going to try to tax somebody for using the navigable waterways, that's prohibited. With a few exceptions.
I want to go back to a question I asked the appellant. Under what authority does the Department of Revenue, or actually the AHC in this case, they used a 50% analysis. Under what authority did they come up with the 50% of the time was spent on the Missouri side of the river?
Right. The commission
yes.
concluded that sales had occurred when they finally came to rest in Missouri, and then the burden was then upon the taxpayers to prove which ones, if in fact they were in another state or if they were in Missouri, and based upon Illinois' decision to tax the northbound ones, it was a reasonable conclusion, and with no evidence to the contrary, it was a reasonable conclusion that those that were southbound, as a matter of fact, came to rest and therefore were subject to use tax while in Missouri. And so, barring evidence from them saying this transaction actually came to rest in Illinois, that presumption that came to rest in Missouri while operating in Missouri on the river were taxed and subject to use tax. So.
And the definition of came to rest?
Mm-hmm. That's in the statute. Mm-hmm. that they were finally ready for use. And so when they came off of the dock in St. Louis and on the southbound side, which they would have come in the St. Louis Harbor and would have been on the Missouri side, they came onto the ship and they were unwrapped, and whether put up or unwrapped is probably the conclusion of that. They were ready for use. They didn't have to be all used at that time, but they were ready for use, and that is coming to rest in Missouri.
And the tax was on all of those goods, but it's just you're assuming about 50% of the goods came from that side of the river and 50% came from the other, but you're taxing all the goods, not 50% of the goods. That came to rest in Missouri, is that right?
No,
or only 50% of the goods that came to rest?
Only 50% of the goods.
Okay.
So the tax was divided in half in terms of all of the goods that came onto the ship. Only half of them were taxed, or those that came from the Missouri side,
okay.
The St. Louis dock.
Now wait, I'm confused. I believe the commission said that all of the southbound deliveries to southbound barges were taxable.
Mm-hmm.
And then the proportion taxable was 50%. Is that not right?
Of total delivery.
I apologize. I could be wrong on that. My apologies. I don't have a recollection of that right
okay.
now. That may be right. I apologize.
But there was evidence as to how many southbound
yes.
Mm-hmm. barges there were and how many north
yes.
or northbound barges.
Yeah, and where those deliveries originated from and all of
okay.
that. Yes. I see that my time is up. I would ask this court to affirm the commission on all three of the bases, the constitutional basis, the Maritime Security Act, as well as the statute of limitations. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel.
Basis for the commission's division of this only assessing part of the taxes was that the commission found that title passed on the boats, and so it depended where the boats were. If the boats were southbound, they were in Missouri. If the boats were northbound, they were in Illinois. If they're in Illinois, Missouri had no basis to tax them.
But did the commission just assume that half of them were northbound and half of them were southbound?
Well, the evidence was that what the boats did, they come down from basically Minneapolis or Chicago, come down the river to St. Louis, turn around and go back north. Then there are others come up from New Orleans or come up the Ohio River or whatever, come up from the south, come up to St. Louis and turn around and go back. So, yes, basically that was a pretty good assumption, I guess, pretty good as far as the way the operations were. That's the way it worked. And Missouri was kind of a turnaround point. The north-southbound barge tows would leave their tow there. It would be taken, either broken up or taken south by another boat, and they'd take another tow north. And so Missouri, St. Louis was the turnaround point.
Was there evidence, though, that the deliveries were made to southbound or northbound barges, or was it just an assumption that half of the deliveries must have been made to each?
Oh, there was evidence. For example, the economy ones, that all the economy ones were all southbound because they were delivered from Wood River, and so they were all delivered southbound, and the ones that she assessed, and the ones from through St. Louis through Louisiana dock were partly southbound and partly northbound, and it was kind of half and half. I mean, that's kind of the way the operations of the company
so
work.
Do you don't object to that finding by the AHC?
Well, as far as northbound is concerned, it's up to Illinois as to whether they want to tax it or not, and so that's really not an issue here.
Right, right.
That's maybe an issue with Illinois later, but it's not an issue in this particular case. Yeah, we're happy with the fact that we'll deal with Illinois when the time comes to deal with Illinois.
Why did title pass on the river if we disregard the separate entities, why would title pass on the river as opposed to a dock?
Because the goods were sold by a Kentucky company and by an Illinois company. And they weren't actually purchased by anybody until the shrink wrap was broken and the goods were inspected.
Opposing counsel says there was the risk of loss transferred at the time they were delivered to the dock.
Well, but the risk of loss and title don't always occur at the same time. And there's actually a concrete case, Kurtz Concrete, I think it is, from this court from several years ago. She found as a fact that the title passed when they actually opened it and approved it, and that was the practice on the river. That was the practice they had with their vendors. That was the industry practice, and they didn't owe if something was wrong with it. I guess I won't because I'm out of time. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel. The matter will be taken under advisement.